I know that you have written about this thing called the imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
What did you have to personally grapple with as you ascended through the organization at Texas Mutual?
Yeah. So it's funny. It kind of all started with like that being a teenage mom. I always felt like I was hiding part of who I was. Mm. So that was just sort of a thread throughout. But I actually don't love the word imposter syndrome anymore.
Oh, okay.
But because what it really is it's self-confidence.
This episode is brought to you by Texas Mutual Insurance Company, the state's leading provider of workers' compensation insurance. Since 1991, Texas Mutual has been helping employers prevent workplace accidents. To learn more about how Texas Mutual provides a competitively priced source of workers' comp insurance for Texas employers, visit www.texasmutual.com. Welcome to Austin Hires Local, your inside access to the work behind workforce development, powered by Workforce Solutions Capital Area. Join us as we dive deep into conversations with trailblazers across the local, state, and national workforce development ecosystem. From elected officials to industry leaders and educators, we uncover candid insights and innovative solutions shaping our workforce landscape. Get ready to explore the intersection of education, economy, and opportunity. This is Austin Hires Local, where the future of our workforce begins.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Austin Hires Local podcast, where we have on-the-record conversation with workforce and industry leaders from around the city, state, and country. My name is Tamara Atkinson. I have the honor of serving as the CEO of Workforce Solutions Capital Area. And today I have the privilege of being joined by someone very special. Jeanette Ward is the president and CEO of Texas Mutual Insurance Company. But not only is she the president and CEO, but Texas Mutual is the sponsor of this podcast. So I can truly say without you here today, we wouldn't have a podcast. And without Texas Mutual, we wouldn't have a podcast. Uh-huh. So thank you. In our conversation today, Jeanette, I'm hoping we can talk about and kind of explore three themes. I happen to know that you know a little something about and you value making things better than you found them. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to talk about that. I'd love to talk about your philosophy around connection and why connection is important, what it looks like, and the role of connection and building partnerships with public-private partnerships. Mm-hmm. And third, I know you to be a problem solver, and I'm hoping you can talk a little bit about your philosophy around problem solving and even mentoring.
Absolutely.
Are you game for this conversation?
I'm game.
Let's jump in.
All right.
Because Workforce Solutions is all about jobs, and we know in order to build a career, you have to start with a job and have a first job.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to know, what was your first job?
Okay. My very, very first job was a dance teacher.
Oh, okay. I see a dancer in you.
I
see it.
Tap ballet jazz. So okay. Faye Burns Dance Studio in Huntsville, Texas.
Okay.
And I taught 2 and 3 year olds ballet, which was really like herding cats. I would say, I'm Miss Jeanette. And they'd go, teacher. But it was a lot of fun. So imagine a room of just like 10 to 12, 2 to 3 year olds and trying to get them to stand still. First position, so I'd learn all the positions. So it was, I think I was really just a glorified babysitter, honestly.
Did you have any kids that kind of, could you tell at age 2 or 3, some kids, did they kind of naturally have it versus others who didn't?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Really?
And I think it probably came from my mom was a dancer, so they really want me to do this. Some kids absolutely hated it, and some kids were totally into it. But mm-hmm. I got to watch some of them kind of grow up into the older ages and more advanced dancing over time. So that was really neat. And we would even travel around and go to dance conventions and contests.
With 2 and 3 year olds?
Well, a little bit older than that. Okay. As they graduated. No, we didn't take them that young. But some of those 2 and 3 year olds turned into really great 7-year-old ballerinas. And it was really cool to watch.
So how long did you do that?
It was really through junior high. I started at 6. I'm sure it wasn't legal employment that we were doing back then. It was a long time ago. So 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade is okay. When I did that. And then my first, I'd say, probably legal real job was working at a grocery store in small town Trinity, Texas, Brookshire Brothers.
Okay.
The kind of place where they would say things like, if you got time to lean, you got time to clean. And
Do you still say that now as president and CEO?
I said it the other day to someone, but I was joking, of course.
And what was your job there at Brooks Brothers?
Brookshire Brothers?
Brookshire Brothers.
Just a cashier.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was before all the electronic pricing, so I'm pretty sure I undercharged and overcharged people when you had to kind of put the meat in and actually calculate how much things were, so who knows.
And then back in the day when there was actual price tag affixed to the cereal box or whatever?
And you punched in the numbers. There was no scanners. Yeah, this was a long time ago.
I remember those days. Remember those days. Well, that's great. So what do you think you learned from those early jobs? And are you know, you mentioned that you kind of feel like you could say some of those things. If you have time to lean, you have time to clean now, but are there other kind of lessons you can pull forward from those experiences?
I think just hard work. Like what I've figured out in my superpower in later life is problem solving. Like I'm a problem solver.
Okay.
And so whatever job I did, I always wanted to make it better. Even, you know, figuring out how can I wrangle these 2-year-olds and get them to pay attention, you know, trying to always figure out the trick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though didn't always love working at the grocery store, definitely found the value in the busier you are, the faster time goes.
Oh, that's good.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
Even if the work's rather mundane or whatever. So, you know, the adage, if you have time to lean, you have time to clean, was actually like, actually, that made the day go faster. Thank you.
Sure. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that with me.
Absolutely.
I want to talk to you a little bit about Texas Mutual and your commitment to workforce development. So I remember a long time ago, I think you were COO of Texas Mutual, correct me if I'm wrong, and I met you and I was not the CEO of Workforce Solutions yet, but I came and pitched you and others at Texas Mutual on supporting this thing we had called a community workforce plan.
Yep.
And I remember just how smart you were and how you asked questions about it. And Texas Mutual was just an early adopter into investing in workforce development.
Right.
But you're an insurance company. So maybe help me and our viewers understand a little bit about what is that connection between workforce development and being an insurance company?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's the type of insurance company we are. So.
Okay.
And even though we're a private insurance company, we were created by the state. We were created with a mission to create an affordable source of workers' comp. Mm-hmm. And basically, as a business, in insurance, we basically do well when the businesses in Texas do well.
Okay.
It took us a while to figure out how to do well in our early days. But once we started actually doing really well, providing affordable workers' comp and having the financial resources to invest back into the state, workforce development made the most sense, right? Because when you think about it, stronger businesses with a trained workforce, they're going to get hurt less often. And so anything we can do to support that workforce will ensure that those businesses have the resources they need to thrive, which means Texas Mutual thrives. So that's kind of how we first got into it. There was always also a what's the right thing to do kind of play to
it.
When you think about, you know, a lot of businesses, you can invest your profits back into your business or you can invest it into your stakeholders, and our policyholders are our owners, our stakeholders. Mm-hmm. And so it seemed right to invest in things that would help them be stronger. So that's kind of how it started. But then it kind of spread to other things, like disaster recovery, helping businesses recover after a disaster. Hurricane Harvey, when it hit Texas, we realized a lot of our customers were closed. They weren't able to pay their employers. Mm. So we decided to provide grants just to help them pay their employees while they were shut down and recovering, because there's really no stopgap like that out there. It's not something we have to do. It's not part of the insurance we offer. You know, if someone was hurt on the job during that time, we'd take care of them.
Sure.
But it was just something that was the right thing to do. And it's all focused on helping businesses be resilient, be strong, and helping the state of Texas and have a strong economy as well. So
I love that. And in doing my research on you, I know that you helped launch Texas Mutual's first corporate citizenship strategy. And one of the tenets of that, as I understand it, is to build resilient communities.
Absolutely.
Now, you just used the word resilience.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about what, maybe say some more about what that means to build resilient communities, not just as a policyholder, but through workforce investments. And I think you started to talk about the other kinds of investments you make.
Yeah. So, and I can't take full credit for that. There's actually a whole team of people back at Texas Mutual that have been focused for a long time on this. It really happened as we started first focusing on safety was where it kind of really started, was how do we make sure that there's a safe and trained workforce?
Sure.
And then how do we, when we discovered that there are some areas there are shortages of workforce, it kind of transferred into you. How do we make sure there's trained workers who are also going to be safe? And then how do we make sure that communities are able to continue, for example, after a disaster? So as we learned more and got more involved in not just the business of insurance, but in really understanding our stakeholders, understanding the different parts of Texas and their different needs, that's where we started kind of being really strategic about where can we make the most impact. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about businesses, a lot of times, especially small businesses, which really fuels the Texas economy. Mm-hmm. If they shut down for any reason, because they don't have enough employees, mm-hmm. they had to suffer tragedy and a disaster, whatever, a lot of them don't ever reopen their doors. Mm. And so that's really struck us as, you know, that shouldn't be. What can we do to help with that? So that's really, you know, all our funding from a philanthropy perspective, which is kind of what we grew into with our corporate citizen strategy. It's not just doing our insurance job well. It's not just being good neighbors and volunteering. It's also where we invest our dollars. And from a philanthropic perspective, it's all focused on that business resiliency from strong, stable workforces, safety, mm-hmm. safety conscious workforce and workplaces, resilient before, during, and after any kind of disasters. And so that's kind of where that corporate citizenship strategy comes from. It's kind of all facets of who we are, but it's not just our insurance business. It goes beyond that.
Do you think that's, you all are unique in seeing that need and driving toward that need?
I think so, because we're a mission-driven, really not-for-profit insurance company. Mm-hmm. So we're able to really think strategically about how we invest our resources. And we can think, it's more than just like you would for a stock company where you have to increase shareholders' value. We're increasing our shareholders' value because policyholders are really our shareholders, the businesses of Texas. So anything we do to make it so that they can be more successful through whatever happens is really increasing the value of our services to them.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to look at it. And I don't know why anyone wouldn't be supportive of what you do and the mission that you have. So thank you for sharing
Absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, the mission we were given was just ensure affordable workers' comp. Uh-huh. But I feel like as we learned more about what Texas needed, that we're still true to our mission, but we made the choice to expand it. And based on feedback from our stakeholders, they are very supportive of what we're doing.
Sounds like another example of taking something and making it better. Being a dance instructor to two-year-olds and you make it a little bit better.
Yeah. Problem solved.
You take an insurance company formed by the state, and you make it a little bit better.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I like that. So Jeanette, Texas Mutual was a early adopter and supporter of the Austin Infrastructure Academy, mm-hmm. which if our viewers don't know, is really a first of a kind in Austin opportunity for workers to get skills and skilled trades, construction, and then be connected with employers and over $25 billion worth of infrastructure projects that are driving our economy over the next 20 years. But when we came to Texas Mutual, or maybe you came to us, you're always such a great partner, about this initiative, you guys seemed to jump on board really quickly. Help me understand, tell me about the connection and why the Austin Infrastructure Academy, why did it appeal to you, both from supporting the industry, but also I'd love to know your thoughts about what is it that you like about the way the Infrastructure Academy is bringing groups together?
Yeah, I love connecting. And really, I think because Texas Mutual, you know, we're all over the state and we kind of have a bird's eye view of the problems. Like I said, we're looking for the problems that we can solve. But this one was really easy. It hit the sweet spot of obviously just pure workforce development. You know, again, we want businesses in the Travis County, Austin area to have the skilled workers they need. We want those big projects to come here so that it fuels the economy, all of those mm-hmm. things. So that was obviously already very strategically aligned. what I loved about the Infrastructure Academy was it was a great partnership. Partnership when you think about government, when you think about businesses, when you think about philanthropy, working together, because you can identify, I've been in many meetings where we talk about the problems. Like, we don't have enough workers, we can't attract these businesses to town. The Infrastructure Academy was a great example of government policy, private business, and those in between coming together and saying, how can we work together to create the right training, the skills needed to bring this investment that's going to help all of us, right?
Sure.
Strengthen everyone. So what we did personally was we figure out what's our role in this. So there was like, here's the idea, but the funding's not coming for a while, so we have to wait, was kind of what we were hearing.
Exactly.
So we're like, oh, well, can we jump in and jumpstart the work so that we're not having to wait? Can we fund it from a philanthropy perspective? So filling those gaps where they exist and bringing all the parties together to solve the problem in the most efficient way is really what made that whole thing attractive. And that's what we look for across the state, is where can we plug in to close a gap to move things forward?
Yeah.
But I love all the different sectors and parties working together to solve real problems, because you can talk about a problem and never get to a solution. And that was an example of we got to a solution, got to a good outcome, and everybody kind of played their part, but we did it in a coordinated fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. And your team participated in that design team, that middle part that you were talking about. And so it's not only your resources, but you allow your team to actively participate and be part of the community, which is so important. You're exactly right with the Infrastructure Academy. We had Cap Metro and Austin Transit Partnership be early investors in the research. But then we knew that there was public and private sector dollars for the actual implementation, but we needed...
There was an in-between.
And that's where you and also Google stepped forward to support us. And we're so grateful. And I don't know that you know this, you probably do, but as a result of your investment, we were able to get unanimous support from City Council for $5 million year one. To right now, we've got people who are in training supported through the Infrastructure Academy, all because you helped us get there. We had to get ready to be able to have the City Council have something they could see and then approve and then fund.
Yeah, I love that. So we're always looking for opportunities to bring different parties together that can solve different parts of a problem. And like I said, be efficient about it and with our resources. And unless we work together, the problems go unsolved, which is the worst thing in the world to me.
I love that about you. I like make it better, problem solver. Yeah. I'm seeing a theme. Close gaps.
And do it efficiently.
I really like that. Well, speaking of closing gaps and speaking of things that communities love to look at, I call it admiring the problem. The communities love to admire the problem, say, oh, this or that. Childcare falls into that category.
Yep.
As you know, the Infrastructure Academy has as a component of it childcare for individuals in training or early in their work history that need childcare. But you personally, but also Texas Mutual has been a supporter of childcare. Tell me a little bit about how childcare fits into, like, why do you care about it? But also, what has Texas Mutual done as it relates to childcare in this community?
Yeah, I'll start more broadly with Texas Mutual. So childcare is really just a component of workforce development. If you can't find childcare, you can't go to work or go to work training or upskill, reskill. So that's critically important. And there's also a long-term component that if we don't have having access to good early childhood development, we don't have a very strong future workforce.
Right.
So there's two components to workforce. It's funny. I came about it in a funny way. So we were building our new building, corporate headquarters in the Mueller development.
Love that building.
Yeah. And we had lost a couple of our employees to a competitor because they had childcare on site. And so this is the first sort of part of the story is that we're like, well, we should have a childcare center because we were competitive. We didn't want to lose those really good employees. And so that's what we did. And then I went to a meeting and I learned that Austin had become a childcare desert. And I was shocked because I actually had my daughter when I was very young. I was 17, moved to Austin, put myself through college with a daughter, was able to find childcare, was able to find affordable housing, had no problem with transportation, put myself through school, started as a receptionist at our company, and now I'm the CEO.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh my God, if there's not access to childcare, I couldn't have done what I did. I mean, it became a personal issue, but it also became an issue where I started looking, you know, looking at our solution for childcare in our building. I'm like, and why didn't we set this up differently now that I know what I know? It was a sudden sort of awakening, I guess, because it had been so long, people forget. And I think it's been interesting being a business leader advocating for childcare is a lot of times the leaders have maybe gone past those early days. And I think, you know, we have one employee who said I can't remember the astonishing amount of money she spent over her children's early years before they entered primary school. You forget, and I think you want to forget.
Yeah.
But it's a huge problem, and it's sort of an invisible problem too. It's also mm-hmm. transitory. Mm-hmm. You have a group of employees who are going through it for a couple of years.
Yep.
And then another group. So there's not a groundswell of this is a problem, but it is a problem.
But it is a problem.
And so it's been interesting, and why I've been such a vocal proponent of it is to make sure that business leaders understand that you may not realize that this is an issue, but here's the data. Here's how many people are not able to enter the workforce. How many billions of dollars that are not being generated in our economy because people are just not able to access childcare. So, and I want there to be opportunity for anyone. Mm-hmm. And if you're not able to go to school, to get to work, you're not able to have that opportunity. So it's something I'm truly passionate about.
So you were a supporter of the ballot initiative that mm-hmm. came forward last November that resulted in a voter-approved childcare initiative.
Yeah, yeah.
Workforce Solutions is partnering with the county on that now. From your perspective, are businesses open to this new initiative? And what else do you think could be done to bring more employers, to help them have the kind of perspective you have from your life experience in really embracing supporting their workers with childcare?
Yeah. Again, I think back to my sort of love also of having sort of collaborative mm-hmm. Approaches, I think this is a perfect opportunity for that. When you think about an individual business doesn't exactly know the needs in that community. Like when we put our childcare center in our building in mm-hmm. Mueller, we had a good feeling that it would be used. And sure enough, they have a long waiting list. And now they're actually starting to accept children, or they were working to accept children on subsidy lists too, which is going to help with the lower income families that need access to care.
We appreciate that. Being the ones that provide that subsidy.
Yeah. So they're getting there. They're working on that now. But I think having this more coordinated view of what are the needs in Travis County, mm-hmm. that where are the childcare gaps, where are the deserts, and getting the businesses involved with like real, like, hey, you're in this area. We think if we could, whatever the solutions are, but you start solving those problems, but you make them real to people. And I think you will find businesses will get involved. But it has to be something that like they can see, the problem that they can see that needs to be solved, not something that's maybe going to support their workforce, they're not sure. So I see a lot of opportunity for education, for using data to understand where the needs are in the organization, mm-hmm. I mean, in the community, sorry, and then coming up with solutions that then could be these public-private partnerships that are going to close a gap that people actually see through data or mm-hmm. through hearing from their employees or finding they can suddenly hire more people, mm-hmm. Especially like I think a lot about restaurants and hospitality. They're so left out of this conversation, mm-hmm. but their needs are really great. And I just see a lot of opportunity for collaboration.
This episode is brought to you by Texas Mutual Insurance Company, the state's leading provider of workers' compensation insurance. Since 1991, Texas Mutual has been helping employers prevent workplace accidents. To learn more about how Texas Mutual provides a competitively priced source of workers' comp insurance for Texas employers, visit www.texasmutual.com.
So, Jeanette, you are the chair now of Early Matters Greater Austin, mm-hmm. Which, as I understand it, is business-led organization or group that is really about business promoting the need for childcare mm-hmm. to other business, but also I think related to the Early Matters for Greater Austin is about finding solutions and promoting collaboration. But why don't you tell me, what is it? Why are you the chair? And how do you think you guys could continue to be used effectively in this community when it comes to business involvement in childcare?
Yeah, so I was approached probably about 6 years ago by Sue Carpenter, who was with United Way at the time, and this is an offshoot of United Way, because I'd become aware of the problem of lack of available childcare and early childhood development opportunities in Austin. And it was really meant to be bringing, for the first time ever, the business voice to this issue. Mm-hmm. Child care advocates and nonprofits had been a voice for a long time with policymakers and others. The business community really hadn't. And again, it's a workforce issue at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It's just not always seen as that. Mm-hmm. And so that was the purpose, is just to bring the voice, try to come up with solutions. I think what I've, you know, landed on is really it's our voice that can help the most, because there are policy people and that are way more qualified to come up with the solutions. But the business perspective can help move things forward, can help provide sort of that diversity of thought on how we come up with solutions. Mm-hmm. And so it's been really exciting to see the progress that's been made from, honestly, the first couple of years of being involved to thinking we're just talking a problem to death solving it, to actually seeing more awareness being raised, more businesses being involved, and then actually seeing this tax rate election to start funding some child care initiatives in Travis County. And there's a statewide effort too. So I served on the committee for several years, was asked to become chair last year, maybe a year and a half ago.
Yeah, congratulations.
I think so. That's good. A great group of people. But I also have the pleasure to work with Early Matters Austin, and there's an Employers for Child Care Task Force that's statewide. Texas Restaurant Association is very engaged in that. And I've got to travel to Amarillo and Dallas and different parts of the state, too, where businesses there are starting to talk more about this as being a workforce issue. So I think right now there's a lot of awareness raising happening, but I think there's more opportunity to, again, collaborate and think about maybe a work-based childcare is in this remote hybrid kind of workforce world isn't the right solution anymore, but maybe strategically placed childcare centers is better, or more coordination on where the childcare centers are for the different needs in the community. So you actually, just like the Infrastructure Academy, you understand the jobs that are needed, or you understand where the childcare slots are needed, and you're able to put together public-private solutions that solve those problems.
And incentivize the kind of actions you want to see and activities you want to see. So let's talk about new businesses moving to Austin. Do you think, how do you think the childcare conversation should interact with new businesses coming to Austin? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I'm not sure, other than I know concepts like incentives for, you know, if you're considering coming, if you considered putting, promoting or supporting childcare in some way. Again, I think the mystery is what's the right solution in the current environment. And I think that's what's missing right now. We don't have all the data we would need, right? So there should be some sort of data collecting to help support some of these decisions. But if we had that, then it could be, you know, you're in a great area, and if you're going to build a building, then it would be great if you would consider a center, and a center that accepts subsidized tuition for low-income kids, because we think this would fill a need in this area. Mm-hmm. And the incentive might be higher if it's truly a desert that has a high need.
You're right.
So things like that.
Yeah, I love that. And I like to think that Workforce Solutions could come in and could support and provide information about what kinds of financial support and subsidies would be available to employers and childcare providers that want to set up in those areas. Yeah. That's something that we can do. People don't all, they think of us as providing subsidies for kids, which we do.
Yeah.
But we also provide a lot of support to the directors, to the staff, buying equipment for the childcare facilities. There's a lot of ways we support the industry and the standing up of childcare, because it can be expensive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's another thing that I've now, in the 5 or 6 years I've been involved with Early Matters, is I've taken tours at many childcare centers and listened to the directors talk about how they're stitching together all the resources they can to make it work. And so I have a special place in my heart for all the folks home-based nonprofit centers. I mean, they're all of the childcare centers. They're doing yeoman's work to take care of our future.
Take care of our kids, our most vulnerable members of our community. And I've met directors that tell me they pay themselves last and only if there's money left over. So I don't think they get enough recognition for that.
I totally agree. And as a business leader, you know, I just see that there's knowledge sharing, there's information sharing, there's so much to be learned if we just all work together and try to solve the problems more collectively.
Yeah.
I think it's right now, it's not very connected. So I'm hoping with some of the funds from the tax rate election that we can have a little bit more consolidated view of the gaps so we can solve them.
I hope so too. I really think as a community, a year from now, a year and a half from now, once we're able to really have the money for the services flowing in our community, I think we're going to have a more comprehensive picture of where there's need and where there's opportunity. And I'm so proud of Travis County and the voters for really putting us on the map for embracing childcare in this way, because I think it's a great support for workers of all stages of their careers.
Absolutely.
But particularly our, you mentioned restaurant workers, hospitality workers. We see in some of those industries is particularly hard. But I want to talk a little bit about, you talked about, shared a little bit about your story, being a single mom, putting yourself through college. But I know that you have written about what it means to be a female leader, to kind of ask for and even be provided mentorship, but also provided, and this thing called the imposter syndrome. And I'd love, you know, maybe to share a little bit about your journey. And if you don't mind, maybe tell us a little bit about kind of what did you have to personally grapple with as you ascended through the organization at Texas Mutual?
So it's funny. It kind of all started with like that being a teenage mom. Like I was not your normal, typical college student. When I started work at Texas Mutual at 23 years old, my daughter was already much older. And people would always see a picture of her. Occasionally she'd come to the office. They're like, you look too young to have a daughter that age. So I always felt like I was hiding part of who I was. So that was just sort of a thread throughout. But I actually don't love the word imposter syndrome anymore.
Oh, okay.
Because what it really is it's self-confidence. Someone told me imposter syndrome sounds like you have a disease. And really, it's just, it's a matter of believing in yourself and having confidence in yourself and getting rid of that voice in your head, because you have, I have no idea what you think of me. Like you can tell me, but I can walk in a room and think, oh, everyone's going to judge me here. I don't belong here. Oh my God, what if they don't think I belong? You know, all of these thoughts that you have, it's all in your head, right, at the end of the day. And even if other people are thinking it, you can't change other people. You can only control yourself and your own thoughts and how you react to things. And so that's what I had to get over. I had to overcome that and realize that when I have something to say in a meeting, that I should say it, because I'd oftentimes walk out and say in the hallway, gosh, I wish we would just do that. And someone would say, that's a great idea. Why don't you say that? You know, I don't think I should. And, you know, but getting to the point of, no, say the thing. If you're not heard, say it again. Don't be afraid to take chances. Don't be afraid to get behind a mic and talk to someone, get on stage, give presentations. If it's uncomfortable, just do it, push through it. That's what I had to learn. That's what I had to get over. And it was all getting out of my own head and my own insecurities. And
is there a moment that you remember putting that into action?
Yes.
Okay, tell me about that.
There's two different distinct things that happened. I was working with an executive coach, and he, this was right when I became chief operating officer. I'd worked with him for quite a while before, and he had really been helping me kind of figure out this insecurity was what was holding me back, and I, you know, just needed to face my fears. And, and so I went to a women's conference, a women in insurance conference, and I just got in the chief operating officer role, and they asked me at the last minute if I would step in for a keynote speaker who had backed out. I was terrified. It was a room of like 500 people, but I just gotten the promotions, so I thought, I'm going to tell my story. So it was the first time I told my story of, you know, I got this promotion. I never thought I'd be successful because I kind of started life out, you know, as a teenage mom, and then I tell them all the story and my career progression, And then I give them my five tips of what I'd learned along the way. When I finished talking, I came off the stage and I had this one woman run up to me in tears saying, "Oh my God, I've never heard my story being told before."
Oh, you were telling someone else's story.
Yeah, she's like, "I've never seen myself represented on stage like that. You know, you were vulnerable, you're real, and I'm so hopeful." Mm. Another woman came up to me and said, "We just found out my daughter's pregnant. I thought it was the end of the world. I'm not feeling that way. Thank you." Another man came up to me and said, "I was raised by a single mom. Mm. I know how hard." I mean, getting that feedback of me thinking that my story was an embarrassment and people would judge me to me telling my story. People need to hear that we're all just people. Mm-hmm. We all go, no one's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Mm-hmm. We all belong. Mm. That was huge.
I love that story.
Yeah.
I love that story. And how did you feel while you were telling your story on that stage? And then how did it make you feel after?
Oh, I mean, terrified on the stage. Yeah. Sweating, shaking, the whole nine yards. The only thing that made it easy is my coach told me, always tell a personal story before you give a presentation. Mm. And this whole story was personal. It was my story. Mm-hmm. So it was easy to tell, even though I was shaking.
But isn't there an anxiety in the vulnerability, though?
For sure. Yeah.
I mean, right.
Yeah. Just know, like, even seeing the paper in your hand when you forget something and go check and your hand shaking. But yeah, afterwards, just that feedback from people, that just recognizing that there's value in sharing your vulnerability and sharing who you really are. Mm-hmm. And what's happened since then is, like, I used to pretend to be someone I'm not, and now I'm just me. Mm. And my career took off after that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd already gotten the promotion to chief operating officer, but...
But here you are
here
today.
I am. Here I am 5-6 years later.
Yeah.
First, one of the very few female CEOs in our industry of a billion-dollar company. So it's... All of that really helps. So that's really what I think about when I think about imposter syndrome, is more just being who you are and being confident in who you are. And it's contagious. I was at another event where I'm an introvert too, had to learn to extrovert. Mm-hmm. And someone told me about, you know, before you walk into one of those rooms where you're the only woman, go in the bathroom and do Superman pose and, like, you got this, and then have confidence. And it was so funny because then I walked into this room and it turned out there were also, like, pseudo celebrities there. I didn't know exactly what I was walking into. It was a golf thing. But I was like, okay, I got this. And I just approached every conversation with confidence. Mm-hmm. And I watched someone was there that I work with. And I watched them suddenly turn around and, like, pay attention to me where they wouldn't before.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, this works. Confidence is, like, a real thing.
Yeah. What I'm hearing in that is fake it till you make it, too. Oh, like act like you feel it.
In my talk I give, that's one of the five pieces of advice is fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, and what I really mean by that is just because you don't know exactly what to do in any situation, don't let it stop you from trying.
Interesting.
Especially if you're a woman. A lot of women will wait until they have all the qualifications, 100%. All the thing, all the experience. Like,
and all the answers. We don't want to speak up unless we're 100% exactly. sure about the facts.
Yeah. And that's the worst thing you do, because you learn by trying. So know enough to be dangerous. Mm-hmm. Try, learn, adjust, but take action and don't wait. Mm-hmm. So yeah, fake it till you make it's one of my favorite pieces of advice.
I'm glad that we share that. Yeah. I had an executive coach that one time said to me, "Tamara, you have analysis paralysis.
Oh, yeah.
You're just trying to learn everything so you could answer any possible question. And so you're never going to be ready." And he said, "What if you go into that meeting and, like, you don't actually over-prepare? You just glance at it and go in." And I was shaking. But it was a fake it till you make it and go in there with confidence. And you know what? The meeting turned out pretty good.
Exactly, yeah. And it's really coming from a place of being just you.
And be confident, as you said. It's about confidence in yourself. Be yourself.
You have value. You have something to say. You know what you're doing.
How does that influence now how you mentor and lead other leaders at Texas Mutual?
Yeah, I mean, number one thing that I do whenever I'm mentoring someone is that's my advice, is a couple of fold, but one is fake it till you make it is always a piece of it. Like, try. Mm-hmm. Don't hold back. Speak up more. You know, you have something to say. You have value is always the message. You know, the problem solving superpower that I have, it's, I, you know, what is your superpower? What is it you bring to the table? actually sitting down and understanding the value that you have or what you're really good at, it's hard for people because they don't want to, so you don't want to brag on yourself.
Sure.
But what I try to tell people is like, but if you understand it, mm-hmm. and you can convincingly other people see it in you, mm-hmm. then it's going to help you grow, mm-hmm. right? And the main thing I've been telling people lately is if you are uncomfortable, if you're scared of it, if you don't want to do it, it's probably something you should do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I believe that.
Like, give that presentation, even if you're sweating bullets, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. The more you do it, the easier it gets, the more you get used to it. Volunteer for that thing you don't know everything about, because you're going to learn and grow. Mm-hmm. If it makes you uncomfortable, it's probably the thing you should be doing, mm-hmm. you're spending your time doing the most of.
How inspiring you must be to work with.
I don't know about that.
I love what you're saying. And I think people are lucky to know you and work with you and have you have that kind of mentality. Those are the attributes of a really strong leader.
Thank you
for that.
Well, I love everyone I work with. And that's one thing. It's like I've been in every part of the company and every role. And so the neat thing that I've really been able to do since I've been CEO role for about 2.5 years now is all the experiences I had along the way. I'm problem solving still. I'm always like, you know, well, I didn't feel trusted when mm-hmm. we had a dress code that was five mm-hmm. pages long and treated us like we didn't, mm-hmm. were children and didn't know how to dress ourselves, mm-hmm. like way back in old dress code days.
Uh-huh. Pantyhose and the whole thing.
Yeah. Thou shall not wear, blah, blah, blah. Now we have a paragraph that basically says, dress for your day, we trust you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all those things along the way that I'm like, why did we do it that way? And we hire great people.
Right.
We just need to make it easy for them to do their jobs.
But thank goodness the times change. I think when I started Workforce Solutions, pretty sure we had a personnel policy that said no visible tattoos.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I
wouldn't be able to hire anyone in Austin.
I was going to say, I wouldn't be able to have any employees probably no. with that. Yeah. But I liked what you're saying. You have to revisit these norms that we grew up with. You have to evolve. Yeah. You have to just take into consideration what are the modern times and what kind of workplace do people want to be in
exactly
today?
What kind of workplace do people do their best work?
100%.
Where they feel trusted.
Yeah.
And where they're allowed to bring their best selves. So yeah. That's what I try to do.
I love that. Yeah. Last question I want to ask you is, let's talk about the future.
Okay.
Where do you see opportunities in the future for organizations, collaborative organizations like Texas Mutual, to do things new, better, different when it comes to supporting resilient communities, workforce development? What do you think is on the horizon, or what should be on the horizon?
Yeah, probably what should be more than maybe what is.
Yeah.
I think that we're all aware of the fact that the pace of change is increasing. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, some of the problems that our communities are facing, they're not necessarily just being solved and pushed aside. So, you know, there's affordability in mm-hmm. Austin and other parts of the
sure.
state. There's like a child care, ensuring that people have access to all the services they need, their basic needs are met so that they can be good neighbors, good citizens, and participate and have a good life. So I definitely think that in order to solve those problems, which don't seem to be heading in the right direction, I'm not seeing a lot of progress. I'm seeing mm-hmm. some in some areas. I think it just is going to take a lot more coordination, a lot more public-private collaboration. I love data. I love to make database mm-hmm. decisions, but mm-hmm. quick ones. Don't analyze too long. So there's a lot of divisiveness in our society in general, but I really think that to truly get to where we need to be as neighbors in our communities, it's going to take all of us working together, finding common areas that we can all agree that we want to do better for our neighbors, we want to do better for our community. So the more we can work together, share data, share ideas, close gaps, I think the better off we'll all be.
I love that vision that you've painted for the future. And I think that's a great way to end this podcast today with that aspirational vision for the future of addressing seemingly intractable issues through public-private partnerships and collaboration. Yep. So bravo to you. And thank you to Texas Mutual for everything that you do to kind of walk the talk in this community and being a true community partner. We really appreciate you.
Well, we've got a lot of great people that truly believe in our mission and believe in being good citizens. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Austin Hires Local, powered by Workforce Solutions Capital Area. To learn more about what you heard today or to see what Workforce Solutions Capital Area can do for you, visit WFSCapitalArea.com. To stay updated on new episodes, subscribe to Austin Hires Local on your podcast app of choice. Until next time.